From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
The fall bird migration is underway, and that means the cast of characters we're seeing and hearing in the garden is changing quickly as we say goodbye for now to some species and keep a close eye out for any southbound travelers who may stop in for a short visit. I love to watch for signs of both and can't imagine a day that doesn't involve watching birds at least a little. That's why I was happy to learn about a fun new book about bird watching basics by the editors of BWD Magazine that ventures into related topics too, like how to make your garden attractive to more birds. Lessons from the new book are our subject today. First, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
I set out decades ago to make a garden for the birds, and it's hard to remember a day since that hasn't involved some degree of engagement with both parts of the picture, the plants and the birds, including lots and lots and lots of bird watching. Today's guests are Jessica Vaughn and Julie Zicafus, both of whom are editors at BWD Magazine, formerly Bird Watchers Digest, and are now, along with their colleague Dawn Hewitt, also the authors of a new edition of the book Bird Watching for Dummies. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, hello. And you're out in Ohio, yes? Visiting each other?
We are, yeah. I'm having it. This is fresh air retreat for Jessica, who lives in Columbus.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
we get her down here and just fill her up with whippoorwills and cicadas for a while.
Oh, well, before we get started, I'll say we'll have a book giveaway of the new book, which I've really been enjoying, with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. That's one thing. This Bird Watching for Dummies is the second edition of a book with almost 30 years under its belt, isn't it?
Yes. And to say that it needed to be updated is an understatement of the year. It dated to 1997, Margaret.
Oh, my. Well, and so that's a while back. And who was the author then?
Bill Thompson III, my late husband. But I had written about a third of the book for him, anything that dealt with gardening, behavior, drawing birds, feeding birds, anything like that that had to do with the backyard interaction with birds, I wrote. So mm-hmm. I had quite a hand in the book in the beginning, and then it was humbling to read my words and realize how completely out of date they were. In every respect.
Right. So, by the way, I'll say to both of you, I love that BWD, it's the acronym, I guess, well, it's the name of the magazine, which was Bird Watchers Digest. Bird Watching for Dummies is BWD. And then in the book, Jessica, I think you explained that it has another meaning of three sort of adjectives that birds bring to mind. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do. Birds, wonder, and delight. Yes, we toyed around with that as a tagline when we relaunched the magazine, and we bring it out every now and then. And it's funny you mentioned that the book has the same initials, because when you said that, we both looked at each other like, oh, it does.
It had never occurred to us.
It really hadn't.
Well, good thing I read it and told you.
Yeah, good thing.
Yes.
Yeah, beauty, wonder, and delight. And really, I mean, for me, that's what nature is about, but especially birds. And really the companionship that they provide for me living in a rural place on my own, you know, both the regulars I'm on a first-name basis with, you know, that I sort of count on seeing each year in their own season, and then the unexpected visitors, you know, it's really an integral part for me of the garden in my life. And so even though I felt like I had some experience, I was sort of more like maybe like an intermediate level person, but and the book is for dummies, but I just it was wonderful because it reminded me that we need to sharpen our skills and remember certain things as we watch the birds, especially to emphasize the watching, right? Not just ticking things off on a list.
Absolutely. We really don't feel that this book is for dummies. That is the brand. But there's something for every birder at every level, we think. And that's the beauty of it. The book can be, you can start at chapter one, you could start, go straight to the gardening chapter. So it's really designed to give a little something new to everyone who wants to advance in some regard of their bird watching.
Right. So, I mean, it covers everything from binoculars and how to use them and the basics of taxonomy. And I mean, so many different subjects. So let's, as I said in the introduction, the migration is underway. The fall migration in some ways can be subtle in your own backyard. At least I feel like it can be in my own backyard. But I was reminded reading the book of some of the basics of bird identification. There's a lot about, how to build your skills, so to speak. And maybe we can, talk about that. And yes, we can turn on the Merlin app. And you have an anecdote about that, Julie, in the book too, about your resistance to using that for a long time and so forth. But I think it's great to also learn the old-fashioned way to ID birds, yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we really emphasize that, to learn it old school, to actually chase down the bird until you see that song coming out of that beak is really the way to cement vocalizations in your head. And it's more fun. It's all very well and good to have your phone tell you what's singing out there, but isn't it much more interesting to sort of pick out a song and track it down and then actually find the bird? That's birding. That's what we want people to do. So we do spend a lot of time talking about the old school ways of doing things because we do not think that these apps have replaced ear birding or actually chasing birds down until you can see them.
Right.
Time of year, the birds aren't as vocal. So Merlin isn't going to help you find warblers right now, but the warblers are
Right.
coming through. So learning bird behavior and those skills are what are going to help you at other times of the year that they're not singing.
Well, and I think that behavior, and there's a lot about that in the book, and I think that's where a lot of the really good watching comes in.
Absolutely.
Is watching their moves, the differences among them, where you see a particular type of bird, habitat-wise, getting to know them, yes,
Yeah.
oh, that's the little, indigo-colored bird. Do you know what I mean? But where and what does it do? And anyway, I love all that. That's the behavior is the exciting part,
Yeah, I
I
think
think.
once you sight a bird, your job has just begun. You shouldn't just say, "Oh yeah, yellow-rumped warbler, next," but if you just stay on it as long as it permits you to, it may do something really interesting that maybe nobody's ever seen one do before. That's where I get excited about bird watching because I like to stay with them and see what they're up to.
Well, and I think in the book, you all write something that's really important, and it took me a long time when I was a beginning birder to really remember this. My impulse was, if I would see a bird, I would like run to get my field guide. Huh. And you know what happened when I got back with the field guide? The bird wasn't there. So you say, look at the bird, not the field guide. And then you say something else, sort of a corollary thing, talk to yourself. And those were two really good things to like say out loud what I was seeing. Do you know what I mean? Like to vocalize it so it got stuck in my head so that when I did go get the book, I knew what had struck me, right?
Right, exactly. You're trying to take a mental photograph of this thing, to hold in your brain until you can get to that book. And the longer you stay on the bird, the more you're going to notice about it. So you really your time is best spent with that bird. It may only give you 20 seconds. You might as well spend those with it.
Right. Which things, Jessica, like, are there things that you, when you're out bird watching, are there things that you always look for, or, like, telltale aspects of a bird, or what, you know, do you have a sort of what you prioritize?
As a beginning birder, I would say I always wanted to identify it. Like, it was just important to know what I was looking at. And the more experienced I've become, it has become less important to put a name to that bird than to spend time with it and enjoy it. And, I'm at a stage now where most of what I see when I'm out birding, I'm going to know what it is. But I went birding yesterday and I saw a lot of warbler butts, and I don't know who they belong to. And that's okay. I still enjoyed finding those warbler butts because it was hard to even see because they're so high up, and warbler
Yes.
neck is a real phenomenon. And so I think a younger version of me birding would have been frustrated by that, but I had no problem. I was still e-birding, and I had no problem checking warbler spa. Like, I was I know that hurts some
So we
people,
should explain what
but
Warbler Spa is on eBird, because eBird.org is the Cornell Lab of Ornithology's sort of database, so to speak, that we could participate in, and we can register our sightings. And warbler SP period is warbler species when you don't know which one it is, but you know it was a warbler, right?
I know that's painful to a lot of people like Julie, but I know that when I go back and look at that list, I'll be like, oh yeah, we had a whole handful of flittering activity up there. And I'll remember it was September 1st, and maybe next September 1st, I'll have a similar experience. And it just, there's dots being connected all the time. So,
And this is such a fun time of year too, because like it's been a doldrummy summer. It's been hot and humid and gross, and I haven't wanted to be out there birding. But now that it's cooled down, it's gotten drier air, and the birds are starting to come through, I'm doing a daily eBird list again, and I've really missed that during the summer. So I always, like this morning, I woke up to the call of a red-breasted nuthatch right outside my window, and I was like, "Yes, they're here!" So it's just fun. It gets you kick started. It's really nice to be able to make a little daily list, and then you can look back at it. It's wonderful.
And the great thing about using something like eBird is that you're then sharing your list. And so scientists and so forth are also getting to see it. So it's
Sure.
has that community aspect as well. But yeah, I loved another sort of command in the book. It said, first impressions, leverage them, to sort of look at, see what strikes you most about a bird when the first glimpse you get of it. And over the years, I've tried to figure out what things should I look for, kind of, I wouldn't have thought in the beginning of bird learning to bird a little bit that like looking at its bill, its beak, that was important, for instance. Or do you know what I mean? Like details like that, I wouldn't think about that yet. Sometimes that can something so small as that can say something about that animal. That you do you know what I mean? It's
Oh, yes, you and that's one of the most common things you see on the identification group Facebook pages, where people say, "I believe this is a yellow warbler," and then people will swoop in and say, "Not with that conical beak, it's not." Because they're just going on local color and field marks, and they aren't thinking about overall structure. And it's so important to really, honestly, beak shape is one of the first things you should look at.
Which is again counterintuitive to a beginning birder
Sure.
completely, and I forget and I have to remind myself, to just look and see, because it tells us something about
The
well
family.
about their family, because and what they can manage to eat, so to speak. You know what I mean? I mean, they're not built for instance cracking nuts
Right,
or
right, right. The beak will get you right into family. So I really kind of zero in on the head, first of all, just because there's so much information there.
So do you, so the beak, eye around the eye, if there's like an eye ring or anything definitive like that, is
Sure. Yeah,
what
beak
else?
shape, eye ring, eye line. And then kind of move on back the bird. Does it have wing bars? Does it have long wings? Does it have short wings? Does it have a long tail? What color are the legs? And it's so funny because, like, when people come to you with, "Oh, I saw this bird. What color was it?" "Well, it was grayish." And you're like, "Well, was the gray on the top of the bird?" "I don't know, it's just grayish." So it's, because
Right,
then,
right,
like,
right.
it becomes pretty obvious pretty quickly that they haven't taken the kind of careful look at it that you need to affect an ID.
Right. And then more in the spring, I feel like, again, that behavior thing that you guys were mentioning earlier. I feel like I can, in the spring, I can take notice, and summer, I can take more notice of the behavior, at least dramatic examples of bird behavior. In the fall, I'm not as, I don't know exactly, except the so-called feeder birds, I guess how I would refer to them, who show up. I guess I know their behavior well, but I don't necessarily know what the migratory birds, I don't know what behavior to expect of them, so I don't know their signals that way. Whereas, in spring and summer, the visitors, like if I have a Louisiana water thrush, it's going to be doing that bobbing dance move, over by the, oh, actually usually by the water garden, or like an American redstart will be like fanning its his tail, and I don't know, he just looks like a butterfly to me sometimes when he does.
Oh,
Do
yeah.
you know what
You're
I mean? There's
lucky to
certain,
have them. Yeah.
huh?
You're lucky to live around red starts. They're lovely.
Oh, they nest in the garden. They all every single year they nest in the garden, usually the same tree, in fact,
Oh,
which is
cool. So you've
totally
actually
wacky.
seen the
Totally.
nest? You've actually seen the little nest?
Oh, sure. It was right. It's right near my like my sort of up one of the upstairs rooms, right near a window of one of the upstairs rooms in the dogwood tree.
Oh,
Perfect.
lovely. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, look, it's a lot of it's luck, right? I mean, yeah. But those types of things I don't feel like I know as well in the fall about the behavior stuff. So again, we talked about how the book tells us more than about how to be a bird watcher. It tells us about lots of other things, again, taxonomy and various things. You talk about gardening for the birds. And Julie, you and I have had other conversations about this on the show, and done stories about it and so forth. And then we've also talked multiple times about sort of bird feeding and so forth. And that's the other season that kind of comes up. And that's how a lot of people really have a relationship with birds, is through bird feeding, yes?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's the single quickest direct line to their hearts.
How many people in this country have that? I think is that are involved with birds? Is it 90 something million or something? So they
90
have.
million is the latest report. Over 90 million people.
Golly.
Do you got do you both, I mean, Julie, I know you feed. Do you as well? I mean, are you both, Jessica, are you both, do you feed in the winter, or do you feed, I mean, is there any kind of guidance that you offer in the book about bird feeding?
Yeah, that was actually one of the big rewrites I had to do, because at the time in the 90s, when Bill, wrote this book, I was all about summer feeding. I was doing that, and I was actually appalled to see some of my recommendations, because I've backed completely off summer feeding now, for so many reasons. I think primary being that I'm a gardener as well, and when you spread the welcome mat for birds in the summer, you also spread it for squirrels, chipmunks, and rabbits and deer, who all enjoy the things that we put out for birds. So I quit feeding in May as soon as it warms up, and I don't start again until about November. That's just me, but I also think that from a disease perspective, it's wise not to feed in the summer.
Jessica, do you have a garden where you feed birds, or?
I do. I live in the suburbs, so a very different habitat than Julie. And I do feed year round, but I do back off in the summer as well, because I have some some native plants that I'd rather them be eating. And also, it's expensive to be a year round bird feeder.
Yes, yes, yes.
But I do enjoy, I have a lot of woodpeckers where I live, which are my favorite bird.
Yeah.
And I have had all kinds of babies this summer, and
Oh,
that's my
so
joy
fun.
of the summer feeding, is I've had red-bellied, and I've had downy and hairy and flickers. So that's my summer joy, is feeding the young woodpeckers.
So what do you feed them?
I have a nut cylinder that they love,
Oh.
and I have peanuts in the shell. So yeah, It's a busy place right now.
Yeah,
I do miss my
I don't.
woodpecker.
Something awful.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
But
I
I do
don't
try
feed
to
in.
limit.
Yeah, sorry, I don't feed in summer either. I have black bear, so I can't.
Oh,
You know, they're just brutal.
Oh
So
man.
from like sometime in March to around after Thanksgiving, I can't really feed. But
Yeah. Written about that in the magazine. Yes.
yeah, but what about sort of the hygiene thing? You know, we were talking about that, Julie. You were saying diseases and so forth, the updates that you had to make to the book from 30 years ago. But what is there like a regimen that you recommend? I don't remember if I've read that part of the book yet. Is there a regimen for like good hygiene as far as how we keep our feeders clean and so forth,
Oh
even in
yeah.
the
Yeah,
winter?
I can talk about that. You know, a lot of people don't realize that if you're feeding like Niger seed or the old, we called it thistle, you've got to shake your feeders once or twice a day, or that stuff just piles up and gets mold.
Ugh, yeah.
And I'm very careful about that. And with sunflower seed as well, every morning before I fill them, I invert the feeders and shake them hard to make sure that there's nothing caking or matting or getting wet in there.
Okay.
That's a very simple thing that you can do that really helps, you know, keep your feeders from becoming a moldy death trap for birds. I also, in the winter, I will rake up the sunflower hulls underneath the feeder regularly and dispose of them, usually in the trash in bags, because that's nasty stuff. Just, you know, full of droppings and everything else. And actually, here in the winter, it gets so muddy in Ohio when it rains a lot that I often will go to the farm store and get a bale of straw and just mulch the area under the feeder to keep my feet off all those hulls and droppings and you know, to keep from slipping and falling on it honestly.
Sure,
Yeah.
sure.
And then it's a simple matter to haul away the dirty mulch and put fresh down, and that kind of keeps the birds from contacting all that nasty stuff too.
Huh, like litter in a pet box.
Pretty much, yeah. It
Yeah,
is.
right?
That's
Yeah.
just one of my coping mechanisms because it gets so slick and muddy under my feet or when it's icy that I don't want to break my arm doing this.
And do we wash the feeder as well, like the tube feeders and so forth? Are we washing
Oh,
them?
sure. Yeah. You can soak them in a mild bleach solution. And just make sure everything is nice and not crusted up. And I'm also a huge dome fan. I put plexi domes or acrylic domes over all of my feeders because I don't want droppings falling into the food. Yeah. So, and those, of course, need to be hosed off regularly just because their job is to keep poop out of the food. So they get very poopy. So, as you may be able to tell, I'm feeding large volumes of birds in the winter. So my problems are exacerbated by great flocks of goldfinches and things like that.
So something else that's coming up, in this time of the year and later on this year, Jessica, I wanted to ask you about it. You talk about it in the book. There's sort of these more advanced to-dos, like ways that we can participate and both learn and also share our information. We mentioned eBird before, but there's like all kinds of big days and counts and so forth. If people haven't participated in those, are there ones that you do that you especially like or that you've done for a long time?
You had mentioned earlier about the book, telling people how to be bird watchers, but I want to emphasize there's no wrong way to be a bird watcher. There's no right way to be a bird watcher. We are just explaining the many ways you can be a bird watcher. So yes, yeah, some people are very much into eBird and keeping track of their lists and being involved in a technological way. And then other people crave community and want to go to events. And there is a big day in October that is, I don't know the
Big
date sit.
off my head, but the big sit.
Columbus Day weekend, usually.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. And so that's a way where you are in a marked area, one spot, and you're waiting for the birds to come to you. And so way different than having a big day where you go out and are trying to find as many birds as you can from the sunrise to sunset and beyond.
Burn as much fossil fuel as
Yes.
possible. Yeah.
And those are fun too, and some people love those. But and there's some winter festivals coming up, and there are I think it's a more active time for local bird clubs. My local Audubon is very active in the winter months with speakers and guests, and I enjoy going to those. So there's a million ways to find community or not, and events to get involved in or not, and there's just no wrong way to enjoy birds.
Right. I mean, I love, the Christmas bird count and, the great
One of my
backyard
favorites.
bird count and things like that. I mean, these are just, it just feels good and it's sort of a ritual.
Yeah, the Christmas bird count is definitely one of my favorites because also I know it is giving back to science, in a very big way for over, I can't remember, it's over 100 years, but it's such a long-standing tradition. And I know there are a lot of annual ones that people look forward to every year, and they have big celebrations and potlucks and things. And so it's a fun thing to get
Is
involved
that
with.
still overseen by the National Audubon Society?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
Yep, their website hosts the information.
So we just have like a minute, and there was one thing in the book. I just want to ask you a quick kind of one word answer kind of question to close out, which is that you talk about a spark bird, kind of a bird that sparked your interest. Maybe it was your first bird ever that you remember or whatever, but it's your kind of your bird. What's your, each of your, Julie and Jessica, what's your spark bird?
Well, it's kind of funny. I got my spark bird right here where I am today at Julie's house because when I was in college, at Marietta College, I interned at Birdwatchers Digest and I used to house sit for Bill and Julie when they would go on birding trips. And so I was, here one, I was winter, I know that. And I was in the kitchen and I looked out and I saw a bird the size of a crow hanging off of some kind of,
Sumac.
it was sumac and it was eating the berries. And I was like, what in the world is that? Because it was so large and I could see red on it. And I knew it wasn't a crow. And so that's the first bird that sent me running into their giant wall of books in the living room to find a field guide. And I had to know what this bird was. And it was a pileated woodpecker.
Oh,
So
okay.
that's my spark bird. That's the bird I
Okay.
always get excited about and
And
probably, and surely why I
shoot.
love the woodpeckers the most.
Julie, real quick, yours
Oh,
is?
blue-winged warbler, 8 years old.
Okay.
Heard it bathing, crawled, saw it, loved it.
Mine's the brown creeper because he's right outside my window in a
That's a
big
good one.
white cedar tree, old white cedar tree. So thank you both, Julie and Jessica. Thank you mu very much. We'll have a book giveaway, as I said. I hope I'll talk to both of you again soon. So thanks. And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening and birding meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.